Thank you for visiting stormthecastle.com. You are listening to the nano novel titled Lion's Last Kill. If you have come here from the NaNoWriMo website, then you know what a nano novel is. If not, then let me explain. November is National Novel Writing Month, and I have taken on the challenge of writing a full novel of at least 50,000 words during this month. What you're listening to now is the audio version of that novel as I am writing it. That means that the writing's going to be a little rough, it's unedited, and you're going to hear it in its unedited version. But hopefully this will convey some of the energy of the story. Let me tell you a little bit about it. It is Lion's Last Kill, and I didn't do any planning or outlining of it at all. I'm just writing it on a daily basis, and the things that happen are as much a surprise to me as they will be to you. The characters in the stories have now taken on a life of their own. I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as I enjoyed writing it and reading it. Now for a disclaimer. This work is copyrighted, and all rights are reserved by the author. You have permission to download or stream this work for your own listening pleasure solely, but you may not reproduce it in any form or post it or any portion of it to a website without the express written consent of the author. Will Califf, Califf Publishing, and stormthecastle.com. For further information, send an email to will@stormthecastle.com. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy it. Lion's Last Kill, Chapter 1. Bosch woke in the middle of the night to the sound of crickets. This happened to him often. Something in the rhythm of the sleep world overlapped with the rhythm of the waking world, and the collision always woke him up. Sometimes he dragged things back with him from that other place, and this time he was thinking about the machine. He could hear it slowly turning and mewling in the other room. It seemed like it was listening and responding to the crickets outside. He dropped his feet off the side of the bed and groped around for his slippers. Autumn in New England is a beautiful yet unpredictable time. One day you could throw all the windows open for the day, and the urge to walk and the scent of fermenting and falling leaves was very strong in you. If you walk in the morning, the sounds of children on the way to school was a balm. For Bosch, this was the reason why autumn was the best season, to return to school. Through his childhood, late summer was a time of great anticipation. School was where things were learned, and there were so many things to be learned. He was many years removed from school now, but the memories were strong. After finding his slippers, he walked in the dark out into the main room. The crickets were continuing the chirping, and the machine continued with its harmonizing. He stopped in the main room near one of the windows, and placed the index finger of his left hand gently on his neck, right over the carotid artery, and began two separate counts. He used two different senses to increment the counts. With his finger, he started a sense count. He beat a slow pace beginning at 1, then 2, 3, 4, and all the way up to 16. With his ears, he counted the chirping of the nearest cricket. It sounded like a pretty good-sized male. It was a bit deeper than all the others. The rhythm of his count was faster. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It was almost twice as fast as the beating of his heart. When he had reached 16 heartbeats, he stopped the counting. The cricket had chirped 32 times, so he did a quick calculation and came up with a very comfortable evening temperature of 69, which was very pleasant for New England in early September. Crickets chirp in a very distinct rhythm that is based on the temperature. The warmer it gets, the faster they chirp. So you can reliably figure out what the temperature is by counting their rhythm. The formula goes like this. Count how many times they chirp in a 15-second span, then add 37 to it. This gives you the temperature in Fahrenheit. His resting heart rate is a steady 72 beats per minute, so that is why he counted out 16 beats. It gave him about 15 seconds. The cricket had chirped 32 times, so he added the 37 to that, and the total added to a comfortable temperature of 67. As his legs paced off the steps through the main room, then down the corridor to the spare room where the machine was, his mind took off on a quick jaunt. The crickets told him the temperature, and the sparrows told him the time left until dusk, and these were good observations, but the new thought struck him, and he stopped in mid-stride. What's the language that they use? Crickets don't count in degrees. They have a heat sense that belongs on some other scale, in some other language. He used an easy formula to translate what the crickets broadcast into something that was useful to him, the Fahrenheit scale. And the sparrows didn't tell the time in hours, of course. They had their own time sense. Again, he just translated this into something that was useful in a human sense. The new thought that struck him and caused him to stop in mid-stride was the thought that maybe the crickets listened to the sparrows and vice versa. He'd always puzzled over the cricket sense of the world and the cricket way of explaining it. And he had also puzzled over the sparrow's sense of the world and how they advertised and communicated there. Every species had a different language, but maybe every species had the same world sense or Weltanschauung. Except, of course, humans. We had our own worldview that didn't match that of the other creatures of the earth. This new insight gave him a twinge of glee. New connections always did, and he quickly looked up the cricket and the sparrow in his Babbage engine. There were a dozen cross-links between them, but none like this. He placed the new cross-link with the keyword Weltanschauung and brought it up further in a category and tagged it again. Bosch had always had peculiar abilities to observe, and when he was a child it had threatened to overwhelm him. The constant bombardment of information from the outside world had almost been too much for him to process. He had always struggled to make sense of too much at once, and at the age of 5, teetering on the brink of mental collapse from overload, a solution had come to him, and he created, in his mind, the first version of his Babbage engine. It was where he categorized all the things he saw and thought. Once it was filed away, it left him alone until he recalled it. The Babbage engine was a big hammer that he could use to pound away at the world and make sense of it. Over the years, the engine itself got bigger and more robust. It wasn't just a storage place for information, it was an engine, and it synthesized things on its own. Since he built that first engine, at the age of 5, he had grown in awareness and ability, and he had overhauled it 4 more times, each version being more complex and more capable than the previous. The last overhaul came just a few years ago, and it had taken 2 weeks to successfully move all the information from the old engine to the new one. And in that time, he had almost totally forgotten to eat or drink. It was very difficult to stop the flow of information once it was started. He had lost 14 pounds in the process, but it was worth it. The new Babbage had a face, and he could talk to it with verbal information, or send it sounds, or even give it things to touch or smell. He paused at the door to the room with the machine and cleared his thoughts. Babbage quieted down and slipped away into dark quiet. The room was large, much like a lavish artist's loft. It was 50 paces to the far wall, which was lined with windows that looked out on a forest panorama. A sliver of moon gently lit the landscape. The ceiling was 12 feet overhead, and the walls were lined with workbenches and tools. In the center of the room was the machine, the one that made the humming that the crickets were so fond of. It stood 8 feet high and 4 feet wide, roughly cylindrical in shape. It vaguely resembled a fist thrust out of the floor of the room. The wrist was stationary in the top part, that could be described as the fist, slowly rotated. This is what appeared to be humming. Standing from the top of it were several cones and wires crossing from cone to cone. Several large bundles of electrical cables as thick as a man's thigh ran from the machine to a large electrical box at one of the walls. He looked at it and his jaw clenched. He had been working on it for 4 years now. Nothing had ever taken him 4 years to accomplish. This had consumed him with an obsession. Oftentimes, days would pass before he stopped to eat or sleep. He had designed it from the kernel of an idea, a flash of insight, with the help of the Oracle. And it was something that went beyond all other flashes of insight. But he couldn't complete it. There was something missing in his thoughts, something that he couldn't get a grasp on. He needed something to bring it to completion, and there was only one place to get it. This, for him, was almost an admission of failure. The thought of him not being able to think through a task was a strange thing for him. He was tempted to bring it up with Babbage again, but he had brought it up so many times and gone through so many different iterations, scenarios, possibilities, and thoughts that it was clear he just couldn't finish a machine with the information that he had in his head. He needed something more. You couldn't build a complete puzzle if you didn't have all the pieces. He had all the pieces he had thought, but he didn't. He was missing something, and it so stupefied him that he knew that he didn't even know what he didn't even know. He walked slowly out to the machine, and grasping a lever on it, much like the handle of a backwoods water pump, he pushed down, and the humming, rotating machine came slowly to a stop. The cricket that was somewhere just outside the window also stopped, and Bosch smiled. It genuinely liked the machine, and was refusing to broadcast the temperature until it came back, he thought. He took a step back from the machine and looked at it slowly. It was a machine, yes, but it was also a sculpture. It had the feel of a sculpture, but one unlike any sculpture this world had ever seen. It was a melding of two arts. It was a machine like any other machine that had been built. It had a motor, transformers, wires, a program, all the things the machines had, but it was something more. The other half of it was a screen shape. The shape of it was exactly what was needed to perform the task it was assigned to do. Screen shaping is an art and a science. A screen shaper can be set a task, and using the right materials and forming the right shape, he makes a screen that does the task. Screen shaping was an art that humans used to know but have long forgotten. The pyramids and the Sphinx are screen shapes, but the centuries have worn away their shape, and they no longer work as intended. They are now just monuments of stone. Bosch had accomplished many things in his life. The threadbender was one thing that up till now was his proudest accomplishment. He looked over at a door that led to it, and it was a great accomplishment. It had opened up many different worlds to him, and one of these worlds is where he learned the art of screen sculpting. Tonight he would use the threadbender and return to find the last piece of the puzzle for the machine. End of chapter 1.